welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Faith, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Scott. Yourself?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Not too bad at all. I've got the advantage. I've been up for a few hours because obviously I'm London-based and you're not London-based, so it's early in the morning for you there. Where are you and what time is it?
I am in Manitoba, Canada right now, and it is 8:35 a.m. here Sunday.
And here in London, we've got a cold snap, so it's about -1 at the moment outside. What is it where you are, dare I ask?
It is currently... just loading up here. It is currently -18, feels like -24.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to stop my whinging about being -1 and feeling cold. All right. Fantastic. One of my best friends, he moved out to Vancouver about 10 years ago. So he often sends me pictures of, like, in the summertime, the beautiful sun against the sea and the oceans, and in the wintertime, the wonderful snow. So you get all the seasons out in Canada, don't you?
Yes, Vancouver's like the pretty side of the winter in Canada.
Right.
Manitoba, okay. On the other hand, is really cold.
It's the proper, yeah, the real side. Yes. Well, even more, thank you for being up so early and braving the cold morning weather. So look, thanks so much. I know a little about you because we had a little brief chat before we hit record, but also before we got the podcast organized. I'm looking forward to the conversation because of the topic we're going to cover. But also, you know, I think you've got a slightly different journey to some of the guests we've had on before, which is always interesting as well. But as always, really, it's just a chat about your experiences and around the key topic of, like, quality coaching and engagement, and especially for the younger players, I think is what we're going to focus on. Does that sound okay?
That sounds great.
Awesome. So before we start then, as always with these things, it's always good to know about the guests. So a bit about your journey, what it is you've done, what it is you're currently doing, if that's okay.
For sure. So I grew up in Regina, Saskatchewan, which is a city of about 200,000 in Canada here. I've been playing soccer since I was young, since I was 3. I played the just kick around kind of soccer, and then I moved to higher level premier when I was around 11. So I've kind of been in the soccer world my whole life. That one was kind of my sport. I took up coaching when I was around 14 or 15 in between my technical sessions as a goalie and then my team sessions. So just kind of filling in where I could, helping out where I could. And through that, I kind of found a passion project within the grassroots stream and helping out with that. So I kind of went full in with that as well as playing when I was 16, 17 and kind of began the education and coach education throughout the province. And mentored under some phenomenal coaches throughout. So Astrid Becker, I'll give her a shout out, and then Yanni Tisalis as well. I was able to kind of shadow some awesome coaches through that. I went for my Canada Soccer National C license here on my 18th birthday. So that was kind of a weird experience being the youngest in the group as well as one of the few females. So that was kind of really cool to have that experience. With that education, I grew into a head coach role of a U13 girls premier team. And then in a few years, I helped out and became the grassroots lead in the summer. So kind of helping out with that group as much as possible and mentoring some coaches through that. I also became a mentee myself and a part of the female coach mentorship program in Saskatchewan. So was able to help with that. Through that whole time from 18 to 22, I was also completing my degree. So I have a bachelor's degree from the Faculty of Kinesiology at the U of R, University of Regina. I guess I should probably say the full name there.
I'm just nodding, going, yeah, okay, yeah.
So I have a bachelor's of sport and recreation studies with a minor in psychology and a major in therapeutic recreation, which is what my job is here in Winnipeg. So I moved here 2 weeks after finishing up my schooling and everything. I moved to Winnipeg for a job. So I'm a recreation therapist here now, as well as kind of my daytime job. And then I got reached out from Amy Harrison at Bonnie Vital here to coach before I moved, and kind of knew I wanted to coach when I moved here. Just had no idea where. I had a few contacts in Winnipeg, but nothing solid. So I got reached out to by her, and then Chris with the Rex program, which I haven't been able to get a part of, because I practice very early and I start work very early. So now I'm in my role with Bonnie Vitale. I'm the head coach for a U14 girls premier team, as well as assistant coach for a U15 girls premier team. And then when I first started, I was also head coaching a U10 boys developmental team. So I had that group under my wing as well. And then I'm also part of their technical staff, so doing their technical sessions with all age groups kind of throughout. And I think that's me. I think that was a lot of information for you in one quick spurt. But yes, so I kind of have a different, I'm only 22, so I started young and kind of I'm still learning throughout the process. But
Well, if it
yeah.
wasn't bad enough, Faith, you finished off, I'm only 22, just to rub it into us, because I'm sure 90% of me and all the listeners will be thinking, oh my gosh, we haven't done half of that, and we've got a few years on you. So well done for squeezing so much into a real short space of time and doing so much by the time you're 22. Faith, that's fantastic. Let's unpick some of these, if that's okay. So you started playing when you were three. Was that all girls, or was it a mix of girls and boys? And I'm trying to work out how far back things have gone since you were started playing, because I look back when we were younger and there was no girls playing football, obviously, and a few kind of came through a few years later on. But for you, was it different, or were you still kind of a bit of a trailblazer?
Yeah, so we at back home at least, what happened was it was kind of just a free for all. So they put all the boys and all the girls together and they split the teams up and you played kind of thing. So it was like that until I would say around 8 or 9. And
Okay.
then once you got older, you got split off into girls and boys. And then once you hit 11 is kind of when you decided if you were wanting to take it seriously, you went to the premier stream. If it was more of a recreation sport, you went to the rec stream. So
Sure.
kind of broke off once you hit the 11-ish age.
Okay, fantastic. And did you say you were a goalie? Is that what I heard, or did I? Okay,
Yes, I
right.
am.
Was that always the case? Did you start off as a goalkeeper, or did you play outfield first and then kind of work your way into goal, or how did that come about?
I played out to begin with. I was a striker, actually.
All
And so
goalkeepers are strikers, really. I think that's
exactly,
the truth.
exactly. I actually, funny story. So I broke two toes when I was around 11 or 12, and I got put in net because you can't run and shoot on broken toes.
Nope.
And I kind of fell in love with it and the rush of kind of everything being on your like end at the end of it all. So yeah, I kind of moved into the position when I was 12 and fell in love with it and went from there.
And do you have a family background of soccer people? I mean, did parents play? Did relatives play and stuff? Is it in the blood, or is it, again, were you doing it all on your own?
My mom played. She didn't play crazy high level or anything, but she played all throughout growing up as well as when she had me, she was playing too.
Okay, fantastic. And you said you started coaching again at 14. So I mean, that's young to get involved in coaching, I guess. Not how was that, because we can guess how that was, but what was your how did you know you wanted to kind of get into a coaching at such a young age?
I really like volunteering, as cheesy as that sounds. I like helping out where I can. That's kind of where my whole job now came
Yeah,
from. It's just
exactly.
helping people. So it was more or less, I was there. I had the extra hour and a half between my session. I couldn't go home because I couldn't drive. I was gonna go eat a granola bar and probably like just hang out with friends who also were gonna coach. So it kind of all fell into place where it was like I was there at the right time at the right place, and I needed Christian service hours for school, so I had to volunteer somewhere, so I might as well coach and enjoy it. And yeah, just kind
And
of
did
fell
you
into
enjoy
place.
it from the beginning?
I did. I loved it right from the start. It was kind of one of those things where as soon as you like know you really like something, it's like you know
It was
right
right.
away.
Yeah. And then you did your C license at 18. And again, we've got to be careful how to position this, because it's not the case for everybody. But over here, I've heard the exception, but sometimes females on coaching courses, particularly young ones, it's not always the most pleasant journey, not for everybody, but it's not always the most pleasant journey, because there's still some people still have got a long way to go and change their mindsets around and seeing things differently, unfortunately. But I think a lot have, but there's just always a few that can spoil it for the many. How was it for you? Was it a different experience there? Was it a pleasant journey, or did you have a few bumps as well?
I think every female in sport will agree there's always a few bumps and the few that are still stuck in the past in their ways of thinking and everything. Going in, I was 17 when I started that course. So it was kind of interesting to go in, A, being the youngest in the room, having that kind of stigma of being a young oh, she's so young, she doesn't know much, like we're wiser than her, that kind of thing. And then moving into, hey, she's a girl too, she's a female, she's one of three females in this course too, so she's a 17-year-old and a female. And so it was kind of one of those things where I acknowledged it as soon as I walked in. I looked to my friend who I was doing the course with, and I looked at him and I said, oh my God, I'm the youngest one here and I'm a girl and all of this. And it was kind of one of those things where I was doing this license with coaches who had coached me. And so it was interesting to have that dynamic as well. The two who led the license who I learned from were Yanni, who's one of my mentors, and Marcus, who coached me to go to nationals. So it was two people who had seen me in a player role as well as now are seeing me in a coaching role. So it was kind of interesting. There's always a few who don't, I'm not going to say don't want, but don't fully support having a female there. And again, especially my age, it was one of those things where it was like, okay, here's the double thing. She's not wise because she hasn't been here long enough to be wise. And she's also a female. And so having that kind of stigma going into it with a few was tough. I won't say it wasn't. There's always going to be a few who kind of question everything you ask.
Of course, yeah.
I had some fantastic, like I said, there was four guys that I coached with for like 5 years who have my back through most of it, and I know that. So I had a few of them with me, as well as obviously Marcus and Yanni, who were supporting me regardless. So it was one of those things where if someone did say something, I knew if I wasn't going to stand up for myself, someone at the table was going to,
yeah,
which
that's always
power
nice.
In numbers. Yeah, power yeah. in numbers. They don't have to be females. There were a few females that I knew as well in that course. That was really great to have them there. But it was really nice to know that if I didn't have the energy to stand up to this man today, someone else would for me, kind of thing. So that was really nice.
Brilliant. Well, good. That sounds like the best of the journey you could possibly have. I think, given all the challenges, and these things make you stronger, right? I think you sometimes as adversity, kind of you come through it, it makes you even stronger. And are you still mm-hmm. playing now, or is it just coaching?
I'm playing recreation. So I'm okay. playing. I'm too young to be on a master's team to go to nationals in Canada, so I can't play a master's team. So I'm playing recreation right now with a few of my friends, just as kind of fun sport.
Okay, good. And you mentioned your job. Well, now, obviously, we don't want to talk about your full-time job too much, really, but because I think it probably has a correlation with what we're going to talk about in the subject matter, maybe it's just worth mentioning this. You're a recreational therapist, is that correct?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Just, what does that involve, and what do you do?
For sure. So I'm a CTRS, so that stands for Certified Therapeutic Recreation Specialist. So I got that certification right after graduating, so in July. There is six of us in the province right now. So minimal numbers over in Manitoba, but it's quite large throughout the United States. Basically, what I do is I get to take recreation activities, so activities like hobbies that people are doing for fun, and I get to pull out the therapeutic value of them. So whether that's art or that's sport or that's something like that, I get to kind of turn it and allow people to realize the therapeutic benefit that those have. So whether it's listening to music and how calming it is and how it helps decrease anxiety, or it's using soccer, for example, if you lost your motion in your legs, trying to regain that strength to kick a ball again, even if it's from sitting, or using art to kind of express your emotions, stuff like that.
And this feeds into your passion, obviously, all about helping people and giving something back, and I guess a very rewarding job.
It is. It's so rewarding. I love my job. I have said it to all the nurses, all the doctors on all my units. I argue I have the best job.
Brilliant. Oh, superb. Hey, thanks so much for that. I think it's so important to get background for the guests we come on. We're so lucky to have some wonderful guests on. And, I think when the conversation unfolds moving forward, now people get a picture of where you've come from to have the views and the thoughts and experience you've had. So thank you so much for that. My next question, I even hate asking it, but I'm going to ask it as I've written it down, but you can interpret it how you want to. How would you describe your coaching philosophy? And I know that word philosophy can be a bit tricky and a bit kind of a bit gunky, really. But really, I guess it's like how you see coaching and your approach to it.
I laughed when I read this question because I got asked this when I first started coaching, and I have notes of kind of what my coaching philosophy was when I was a 15-year-old coach and then an 18-year-old coach and kind of making my way down the stream. So I've heard this multiple times, and I'm fine with, I have no beef with the wording. I think it's fine.
It's how you interpret it, right? Because like, I think some people think, oh, no, I need to answer like in some kind of massive thing, but it could be three words. It could be three pages. I think it depends. But, you know, I can't think of a better way of asking, like summarizing that word.
Yeah.
But no, go on anyway. Sorry, sure. I've interrupted you.
No, you're good. And so I kind of break it down when I look at it as my personal, what I'm looking to get out of it, and then my like coaching philosophy. So my technical tactical moments of the game. If we're going into kind of my philosophical approach, I look a lot more at making meaningful relationships on and off the field, and focusing on the athletes that are coming to me as humans rather than robots. They're not there just to play soccer. They're there to have fun. It doesn't matter the age group. They're there to be with their friends and have fun. And so kind of making sure that I'm creating like confident players. I'm looking at players to become confident on the ball. We want to create ball hogs, quote unquote, as much as we can so that they're confident with the ball. We don't want to encourage them to pass that ball away as soon as they get the ball. And so looking into that side, kind of making a fun focus session, having like players engaged as much as they possibly can be, creating that everlasting love for the game that I was lucky enough to get and that I've been able to bring to my coaching. And like making good players, but like better humans is kind of what I always say. So making sure that we're making good soccer players. Yes, we're focusing on good footballers, but we also want them to be good humans. We don't want them to be crazy good soccer players and terrible humans. So making sure we're focusing in on that. I guess for my technical tactical side, I am a big, big fan of kind of breaking down the game for the players to build it back up. So I go by the four moments. So your AT, DT, AO, and DT, or DO, sorry. And breaking down those for the athletes. So ensuring that they kind of know what those look like, what we're looking to find in those moments, and creating the education that they need to understand them as much as they can going forward on and off the field. So they're able to have that proper language when speaking to their teammates or speaking to me about what they feel needs to happen and what they think would look good, and kind of hearing them out for that. So educating and then creating those opportunities to kind of grow from it, I guess. Yeah.
You abbreviated the four moments in the game. Now, obviously, I think I know what you meant with four moments in the game, but let's be perfectly clear then. So what were the abbreviations and what do they stand for again?
AT would be your attacking transition.
Okay.
And so that's you're looking to go, you win the ball immediately. You're looking to go forward. If you have space, you're looking to dribble, that kind of thing. Your AO in that sense would be you won the ball, attacking transition. You won the ball and you can't go forward. So you're looking to secure two passes and then move forward. So keeping possession rather than immediately looking to go. Your defensive transition is your DT. That would be you just lost the ball, and that's what I call the hunt. You're looking to win it back in 10 seconds. So you're looking to immediately look to win. And then your defensive organization, which would be you just lost the ball and you couldn't win it back in 10 seconds. Now what? So you're looking to get your kind of line of attack set. You're looking to organize your defensive players, that kind of thing. So your pressure cover balance comes more into tune with that one.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Because I mean, that is a slightly different variation of how we might see it, or how I've been coached, I guess, or the coach course we've covered, where you kind of positive transition, negative transition, and two moments in between. Mm-hmm. But it's similar, but it's a bit different. That's interesting, because that might feed into now about kind of how your coaching goes. So if we were to come and see one of your coaching sessions, and I think you often, or am I right in thinking that mostly you've coached like younger ones? Is that right? I mean, I'm not saying mostly what under 15s, 14s and below that. So we're not looking at adult teams here, are we?
No.
No. Okay.
Adult teams scare me. I'm still a baby. I can't do that yet.
You're preaching to the converted there. I think like a child, so I can coach children. I don't think like an adult, so I've got no chance of coaching adults.
Exactly.
Okay. So what does a faith coaching session look like then?
Okay, I'm going to break it down to my older group. So that would be like my U15, 14, 13 age group. With them, both my age, like both the younger grassroots age groups and the older age groups, I use what Canada Soccer, when I did the training, it was called GAG. So it's game activity game. I think it's called whole part whole now. But basically what I do is for my girls, I always start with FIFA 11 warm-up. I grew up using that warm up, and it's scientific based and researched, and I believe it works. So I use that with my older kids, and then I move into a fun warm up game. So looking at getting more movement than skill on the ball. So it doesn't necessarily have to have a ball at their feet directly, more of a movement and awareness piece than anything. And kind of that's where I look to build their relationship with their teammates. So it could be a more fun game, or it could be like one that's not even related to soccer, stuff like that, where it's more movement based and more relationship based than specifically jumping right into skill. Following that, I do the first G, which is our game. That game is related to whatever theme's at hand. So in the four moments, we pick one of the four moments and we focus on that as the theme. So that is our small-sided game, but there's conditions that emphasize the theme that we're working towards. So if it is our attacking transition, it's looking at forcing those moments of transition to happen. So the quick transitions are happening. As soon as you win possession, you need to go forward. You need to take three steps, like that kind of thing. So looking to force, not force, force feels very strong.
Encourage.
We're looking to encourage and emphasize the...
You will do it. Now we see the rule exactly. 5 session, you see.
You're looking to encourage and emphasize the theme that you're working on that week. So that's your first game. Your activity, I hate the word drill, but it's where your drill would come in. So that would be your activity that's related to the theme that's not a small-sided game. So more of your task-focused activity. So you're emphasizing that theme. It's more of a specific environment. So more controlled environment, you're looking at specifically working on what parts of that theme are. So breaking down the moment for them. So we're working on our dribbling. We're working on our 1v1 attacking. We're looking at all these things and kind of breaking it down and explaining that to them. I am a big fan of breaking down what my brain is saying to the athletes. Keep it all in here. It's just going to come out word vomit anyways. So if I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you what the point of us doing this is. So making sure they're aware of what the goal of the game is, or what the goal of the drill is or activity is, and making sure that they know kind of what's happening. They're not just getting thrown into a drill and hoping that they know what's happening. And then the last part of that is your second game, which is just a small-sided game with no restrictions. So that should look like a proper soccer game. I sometimes put in a small restriction of you have to dribble or pass rather than throw it in if we're looking to encourage that. But if not, then it's just a regular game of soccer. That's what my older age groups look like. And then the younger age groups kind of based along the same thing. So with them, it's a lot more introducing the skill and basic fundamentals rather than focusing and narrowing down on the four moments. So I still for a coaching lens, I still use the four moments, but I don't break it down nearly as much as I do with the older girls. My older group, if you were to go up to them and say, what is an attacking transition, they would be able to list off, and I'm very proud of this, they would be able to list
I can
off
tell.
All the moments of an attacking transition, what they should be doing. If you mentioned hunt, they would know the 10-second rule. If we hear faith counting, that's bad. We shouldn't hear faith counting, stuff like that. So I bring that in usually around U13 is when I start to kind of emphasize the importance of knowing the four moments. But for my U10 boys and grassroots, I usually kind of create a game to begin with that has the ball. So we want that confidence on the ball. We're going to do a game where they keep possession the entire time. So whether that's a game of keep away or that's a game of, we call it shark attack, where everyone has a ball and one person doesn't, and they're trying to kick the other people's ball out, something like that. We move into the first kind of G in the gag session. So your first game. So I do the same kind of thing where you do a game that emphasizes the theme. So there's creates kind of restrictions in what they're doing, but it looks like a game in a way. So making sure that we're still playing the right direction. We're still looking to finish on scoring some sort of goal. It doesn't have to be in a net. It could be dribbling into an end zone. It could be kicking a ball off a cone, that kind of thing. It could be passing into an end zone, but we're still looking to find the end goal. And then we move into the activity, which for this age group, it's a lot more likely that you're going to have 1v1 or 2v2 situations, or 1v none situations, or 2v none situations. And so making sure that with the younger kids, you're emphasizing those situations rather than playing a 4v4 game where every kid is paying attention, because they're probably not. You probably have one kid who's not at all paying attention or sitting down, or attempting to tie his shoe because he just learned how to tie his shoe or something like that. So creating game-like situations for them looks a lot different than creating game-like situations for my older kids. So making sure we're using an activity that's practicing basic skills that we're introducing, but still keeping kids engaged because kids have a very short attention span. And so making sure every kid is doing something and is a part of that activity is kind of my most important thing. I hate lines. I hate lines so much. And so making sure that there's no lines. I am personally a human with ADHD. I hate lines myself. So I can't even imagine little kids being in lines. And then finishing it off again with a small-sided game. Usually with this age, like with the younger age groups, I do without goalies, just because I'm a strong believer in integrating goalies into sessions rather than having them stand in the net when they're not going to get shots. And so making sure that they're confident with the ball at their feet as well, right? If we create a player, we can create a goalie. So making sure that that is also emphasized.
Well,
Exactly.
Faith, that's fantastic. I love the way you broke it down for how you might approach slightly older groups, slightly younger groups, and that makes total sense. And how you kind of you just kind of redefine how you approach it in the sense I'm slightly more games based, I would say, with younger ones, but it's not that you're not games based with the older ones, right? It's still very much games for the older ones too. Just a couple of questions then. Obviously, detail seems very important to you. You threw out some great phases there, like straight away. So obviously, the details there, and I'm sure your players obviously get this ingrained in them. How do you do that? Because the danger here is like it could be, and I've seen this myself, where when you know or what you believe in is you're passionate about, and you might have these lists of things that are going to help. I think one of the mistakes coaches make then is it becomes almost like, right, let's stop and talk about this for 10 minutes, and I'm going to tell you my list, and then you're going to memorize them, you're going to go and do it. You know, and I don't know if that's always the most effective way of doing it. You said kids have low attention spans. I think it's adults do as well, don't they? You know, so. How do you go about getting that wonderful detail that you've obviously got around your moments of the game into the player so it works in an effective way and an engaging way?
I would say I like to set, so we within my older age groups, we do classroom sessions as well. So it's not just strictly that we are only talking about that practice. I like to make sure that athletes don't feel like they're in school. They go to school every day and then they come to soccer. Soccer's supposed to be that space to be creative. So I don't want it to ever feel like they're kind of in lecture or being told what to do or any of that, because I am a big fan of creativity on the field. With that being said, I think that I have the tendency to coach, like I said, a lot overhead. I coach as they're playing rather than stopping the game completely and bringing it in. That's how I got taught to coach, is kind of rather than creating like stop moments in time and stopping the flow of the game, I encourage them to continue playing, but they can hear my voice. And if they don't, then oh well. But most of the time, they can hear my voice. So kind of making sure that I'm not completely stopping the flow, but we're still able to talk about it. I start all my sessions introducing what we're doing that day. So ensuring that all of us are on the same page. So if I say, okay, our theme this week is our attacking transition, who can tell me what that could look like? And usually you get the one kid who's like, well, it's a transition while we're attacking. And it's one of those things where it's like, yes, it is. You're correct. Thank you. And then it's kind of, and you might feel dumb being like, okay, then what is that? What do you do when you're attacking? What does this look like? Kind of thing. And I like them to answer, and we use their terminology rather than using mine. We don't have to use mine. We can use the 4 moments of the game as much as we want, but I'm not the one playing the game anymore. And so ensuring that they kind of all are on the same page with their terminology, and it's not just up to me and my assistant coaches. It's them playing. They need to know what they're doing, not me. I've done my time. Like my time is
Exactly.
past. And so, yeah, making sure that they know. We do classroom sessions, like I said, with the athletes as well. I really enjoy classroom sessions. I kind of use it as a team bonding session as well. So we might break down a game that we had that weekend and talk about kind of what we looked like in it and what we found was beneficial, 2 things we did right, 2 things we could work on, and kind of look at what that did. And in those sessions, I find the girls using the 4 moment terminology more than I did. So talking about their hunt, like they might be talking about their hunt and I didn't even mention their hunt, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or like tons of stuff like that where they start using the terminology more often than my assistant coaches do. And we all kind of sit there and I'm proud because I'm sitting here listening to them have these intellect conversations and I am not contributing at all. And they're having these conversations without
Perfect.
me on the pitch.
Yeah.
It's so fun to watch the growth from even when I first got them, like having to introduce all of the four moments and kind of break down the game. And I had to explain to parents, hey, this might look like chaos right now because we're breaking down the game, like down to the foundation of it. And in order to have kind of a sturdy buildup, you need to have a sturdy foundation. So making sure that the girls know this is going to feel like chaos right now. Like you're going to look like you have no idea what you are doing. That is normal. Like create some sort of peace in the chaos, like use it to your advantage kind of thing. And so, yeah, I.
How important is it then? You said the language a few times actually, and having that same vocabulary, right? Knowing what words mean. So when you use something as a coach, the players really understand what that term means. How important is that, do you think, and with your assistant coaches as well? Is that an important part of how you approach your coaching?
Yeah, so when I first moved to Manitoba from Saskatchewan, I was coaching and using words, and I could tell that no one knew what I was saying and no one knew what I was asking. So I would yell like step or push, and they had no idea what I was saying, and they would just look at me. And I looked at my assistant coaches at one point and I was like, what am I saying wrong? Like what? And they had no idea what push meant or like that kind of thing. So kind of making sure we're all on the same track and they know what I'm saying is so obviously important. Like I'm trying to communicate with athletes, and if they don't know what I'm saying, that communication is absolutely pointless and it's just going to confuse them more.
I see
And
so
so
many coaches that do use words that they understand and know, and sometimes use different words to say the same thing, you know, and then like the players, you can see it's like a different language, you know, and actually when you use a common language and people don't know what you mean, everything just seems to work a lot easier.
And that's it, is now everyone knows what everyone is saying. No one is standing like an animal in headlights, not knowing what's happening. And that was like within my first like week and a half of being here, I noticed that. And that's kind of where the 4 moment breakdown education for the athletes, as well as my coaches and myself, kind of began is okay, I now know that you guys have no idea what I'm saying. Now's the time we're going to figure out some common language and we'll use your words and we'll use some of mine and we'll make our own little language that we all understand and we all can kind of say, like, rather than just me assuming people know what I'm saying.
Awesome. And how long do you get with the players then? Because obviously, if you've got classroom sessions and practical sessions, you've obviously got a fair bit of time with them. On a week, how many sessions might you get, and how might that break up with regards to practical and classroom?
So we're on turf 3 times a week for an hour and a half each time. And then we have 1 to 2 games on the weekend. So right now we're in our break, our winter break, but usually it's 3 times on field a week and then games. And then classroom sessions are on the coaches. So we get to kind of decide. So I like to do classroom sessions once, usually every 2 weeks. And then we also do one post game. So we have our game on the weekend, and then Monday practice, we usually spend about 20 minutes kind of discussing the game if we felt it went good, if we felt it went not so good, and kind of that kind of thing. I do a lot of goal setting with my girls' team and with all my teams, I guess. I have the players create 2 goals that they want to work towards through the game just because that helps with female athletes. That's proven to help. And then I have them. I call them packs, but it would be the midfield pack, the defensive pack, and then the forward pack. So they all break into their pack and make pack goals. So they create a goal specifically for their position, and come back to me with that goal so that their positional awareness kind of has something to work towards. And then as a team, they create a team goal. So they create something that they want to focus on this game. And again, that's one of the situations where those 4 moments and that language comes out. And it is what such a cool moment to see them initiating that. Because I leave the room when they make their goals. I give them 10 minutes to come back to me with all their goals. And then that is that. I don't make any comments on their goals. I literally just take their goals and write them down and don't say a word. That's on them. So.
I get a sense, Faith, that part of your approach to coaching, whether it's kind of deliberate or not, is a bit of player ownership responsibility and allowing them to feel like it's their team as well, and actually having opportunities to make decisions in that process, like even like agreeing the language, stuff like that. Is that mm-hmm. is that how you go about it? Is it a conscious thing, or is that just because you're trying to develop, like you said, great humans as well as great football players?
I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I have been told multiple times that mine is very player based, and I want it to be. That's kind of my goal, is I want the players to be in control of the game. They're, like I said, they're the ones playing, not me. I am there to facilitate and there to coach them as much as I can. But in the end, I can't make them play, nor do I want them to make them play the way that I want, like, see, like, these dream athletes playing. I like athletes taking ownership of something themselves, and I want it to feel like it's their team. It's not my team. I'm not playing. It's their team. They are the ones who are doing all the work. I put in work as a coach, but I don't put in work when the games are there. Like, they're the ones scoring the goals. They're the ones as a team making that bond to move forward. So I would agree with that statement that it's a lot of player ownership with my teams. I came from a team where I have best friends that I grew up with playing, and I want to create that same kind of situation that these girls can have some of their best friends on their team as well.
That's superb, Faith. It's funny, I think with coaches, we spoke this before in episodes, where I think coaches often come from one or two places. Either they've had a great experience, they want to replicate that for players, or they've had a really bad one, they want to show that it can be done better, you know. And I think it's nice when coaches come from a place where they've had a great journey themselves, and they can add on some extra value from that wonderful journey, and their players get the benefit, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think I've been able to experience kind of the rough side of sport and then the really good side. Like, I would argue the team that I went to nationals with, I have some of my best friends still to this day that I went to nationals with. That team also went through some of the hardest, like, team-wise things that I have been involved with. So whether that was drama, whether that was coaching, whether that was all of that kind of stuff, I've seen both ends of a really good coach and a really not so good coach. So kind of being able to acknowledge those and move forward, keeping those in the back of my head.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, this is a massive question now, but it's your fault, because I think we agreed it beforehand anyway, so I'm not going to apologize. So look, in your opinion, let's make it fair. In your opinion, what would you say is quality coaching? And you may have covered some of things already in what you said, because I've kind mm-hmm. of taken you off different roads already. So, but just really, what would you say, how do you see quality coaching?
I'm laughing because I have it pulled up kind of on my screen off to the side. And the first one is puts the athlete first in the scheme of the game. And like I said, that's my personal opinion. I think the athletes should run the game.
I love that. I love the fact it's your first one as well, because actually that would be a lot of people to think, but maybe not always necessarily their first point they make, but mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I think if you put the athlete first, you also get a lot of benefits from that, in the sense that they feel like they're part of the process, and you get higher engagement, don't you? Which I'm sure we'll come on to as well. So exactly. No apologies for making it your first one. I know we just covered it before, but it's worth saying it twice anyway.
For sure. And then kind of creating an environment to allow mistakes to happen and encourage them to happen. You don't learn if you don't make mistakes. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that athletes come into, is they're scared to make mistakes. And I think that is so toxic within the sporting world in general. With any sport, you see that athletes are terrified to make a mistake in the fear that coach is going to be mad. And kind of ensuring, like, I tell all my athletes, anything that happens, if they say sorry, I immediately am like, you do not need to say sorry. You are here to make mistakes. That is the entire point of sport, is you're making mistakes. Sometimes the mistakes work in your favor. Sometimes you get a good bounce. Other times you don't, and you're trying to chase all the way back to get that player who just stole your ball. So it's one of those things where kind of allowing for mistakes to happen and encouraging them, telling them that you're not going to yell at them for making a mistake, because it's fine. The world is not going to crash down because you made a mistake in practice.
If you're not making mistakes, I'm not doing my job right, because it's best to be too safe. It must be too easy. I mean, we need to push it to a level where mistakes are going to happen, right? And that'll happen in the game anyway. We don't want it to be too safe. So embrace mm-hmm. the challenge and push yourself beyond where it's safe.
Exactly. It gets you out of your comfort zone just enough to try something new, which it could work. You could have a new move that you try to do or something like that, right? Yeah. So encouraging those situations where athletes are able to make those mistakes in a safe setting where they're not afraid to do that is one of the biggest things, I think, in quality coaching. My next one, I would say, would be ask your athletes questions. Don't just give answers. Ask them questions. Like I said, I'm a big athlete first and allow them to own the game. So asking them questions like, why do we think we played that? Why did you play that ball? What do you see, kind of thing, allowing yourself to see it in their lens. Again, that allows them to feel more comfortable to make mistakes. You're going to hear them out. You're not just going to rip into them as soon as they make a mistake. You're going to want to know why and kind of ask them and allow yourself to see them in their lens, I think is super, super important as well. Not just giving the answers because you don't know everything. None of us know everything. No one in this world knows everything. So kind of emphasizing that, allowing them to see you as a person and being vulnerable and seeing you as not this perfect human being who's on a pedestal, who's their coach, but that you're a normal human as well, who's trying to learn from them too. So yeah, asking questions, not just giving answers, I think is a big one, and quality coaching as well. Like I said, like team bonding is a big one. That engagement level is huge within sport in general. Doesn't matter the age group, doesn't matter the level. Ensuring that those athletes are bonding outside of the pitch as well as on the pitch, I think is super important. Even if they're not best friends, they have to get along to play a sport. You can't have two kids who hate each other playing on the same team. It's not going to work. It's never going to work. And so ensuring that everyone is at least civil. If you can't, like, if they can't be friends, they can be civil.
This is life skills again, isn't it? You don't always get to choose the
Exactly.
people you hang around with. So you've got to have the ability to be able to just manage
Exactly.
those. So, and I loved it when you said when you were explaining how your coaches might look, and you mentioned the older group, and you said actually part of what you do after, I think it was the 3 for 11, is you kind of go into some kind of movement stuff. But in the back of your mind, you're always thinking about how that can be kind of fun and teamworky based or partners based. And I love that. I could see now if you had two players that maybe had a little fallout the week before in training, maybe they've had a little clash or something. Well, actually, you could do a fun warm-up game and they're paired up now and working together. And if you've got that in your head as part of the session, then there's clever ways in which you can build this up right within the session,
Yeah,
make it happen.
exactly. So yeah, kind of making that space again, a safe space for the players to be in, for them to grow as a team, not individuals. It's a team sport. We all know that you can't have one player who runs the entire pitch. That's not gonna work. So kind of making sure, and the players know that, they are well aware of that, as much as they don't want to admit it some days, they can't take on a team themselves. So ensuring that you're creating that environment where everyone rallies together to make each other better, regardless of their playing level, regardless of social status, like how the drama, who so and so is talking to so and so, and that kind of thing. Taking that out, and it's a sport and a team thing first rather than a drama filled space. And then I guess I will put in like competitive. I'm a competitive human. I think anyone who's in the world of sport is. You have to be in sport. I have a little brother who's also a high level athlete. So I grew up in a competitive home. And so ensuring that
It's all
everything I
making
do,
sense now.
exactly, ensuring everything that I do still has that competitive edge to it. So we want a winner. We want someone to win. Everyone in the world wants something, wants to win. So ensuring that we still have that competitive edge, I find sometimes it gets taken off female sport, which I don't agree with, but ensuring that that competitive edge is brought out in kind of most things that you do.
Fantastic. And I hope this isn't a silly question, but because quality coaching is important regardless of what age or stage you're at within in your journey, as a coach or as a player, as a sports person. But why would you say it was especially important for younger players, the ones starting off on their journey?
Like I mentioned with the four moments, like foundation builds a sturdy base. So kind of ensuring that you have quality coaches who are making that good coaching experience. Like we talked about, like if you have a terrible experience with sport, you're not going to want to come back. You're not going to want to stay and continue playing. So making sure that their first introduction to sport is a good one is so, so key in keeping athletes in the game. I think especially with females, their females drop off at a young age. And so ensuring that you're creating the space that makes them want to stay, and kind of having good coaches and quality coaching in that space that they're learning, but they still want to come back. They continually want to come back and continue learning, continue playing, I think is one of the biggest things, is kind of you're creating that everlasting love for the game. And it starts at a young age. You have to have a good experience at a young age to be the sport that the kid wants to come back to. I'm all for multi-sport athletes, but realistically, they're not going to, if they have a baseball coach who's better quality and better, like nicer to them and has more fun with them, they're going to want to go there before they want to come to soccer. So creating that quality coaching and quality engagement at such a, like at a young age, I think is one of the most important things to keep athletes in the game.
And how is it in Canada? Because in England, we tend to have a desire to, as coaches, a lot of coaches, especially professional coaches, they want to work up the age groups and get to the older groups, you know, as soon as they can, really. It seems more aspirational to kind of work that where, you know, and so the younger ages don't always get, though I say it, you know, the more experienced or more qualified coaches. Is that the same in Canada or is it different?
I think there's a stigma. I would argue in multiple places throughout the world that grassroots coaches are always female coaches. And that's one of actually my points in further in, but I think it depends. I think that lots of times, obviously people start at grassroots to say they have built their way up. Like you said, the kind of inspiration to go pro or go to the higher age groups. And I would say that it really depends. Lots of coaches start at that age group, so they're not as quality coaches as those at older age groups are. Yes. But I also think that there's so much mentoring to be done at the younger age groups for coaches. And I think that's where you have to break it down to the basic level to be a good coach at grassroots level. So you have to understand the game at that very basic level to create a good player. So I think it kind of depends on how you look at it. You can look at it as, yes, there's lots of coaches who come to grassroots as their first coaching experience. So they might not be as quality as some of the higher level coaches, but they're also having to break it down as a kid who's never touched a ball. So they know those fundamental skills and how to coach and teach those fundamental skills better than anyone who has ever been in that role. And they have a lot more, I would argue, a lot more patience than some of the older level coaches.
I know you're very much passionate about engagement and building player engagement. For you, what do you mean by engagement for you, and why do you think it's so important in coaching?
I think engagement can look a lot of different ways. It can look at like as simple as paying attention during a conversation, or it can look at the kids asking you questions back saying, why are we doing this? Where is this going to happen in the game kind of situation? I look at it, obviously, I like questions. I'm a type A person. I like to hear everyone's thoughts. And I've said multiple times how proud I am of the teams that I coach who can break down the game. So engaging in conversation outside of the sport, engaging in those like intellectual conversations that I'd never have seen U13 girls have about the sport, and like being confident that if I sent them to one of the coaches who I have done education with, they would probably out education those coaches and be able to explain some of these four moments better than they could. And so knowing that they were engaged in that sense and they're wanting to talk about it. And then it can look as simple as smile and laughs in practice and like them actually enjoying themselves in practice. They make a great run and they know it was a good run. So they turn around and are huffing and puffing, but they're smiling on their walk back to their position or stuff like that, where you can tell that they really want to be there. And I think that's one of the most important things in the world of engagement is you're able to see that athletes want to be there. They're not forced to be there. They're not dreading coming to practice. They want to be there. They're engaged in the sport. They want to see it happen. And so they come to practice eager to learn and eager to try. And so I would say, yeah, engagement looks a lot different in a lot of different senses. But in general statement, I would just say like wanting to be a part of the game would be kind of what engagement looks like. And that can look, yeah, as simple as paying attention in practice, engaging in conversation, or like just looking happy to be there.
I think there's one thing that all us coaches have, and I think everyone's got this. You know when your players are engaged, don't you? Collectively or individually, you just know, don't you? I mean, I've done some sessions that they're okay and it all looks all right and it kind of goes right. But had that missing thing, it wasn't quite as bouncy as when the players are really, you know, embracing it and they're just so focused on it. It's almost like you can just step back and just watch it unfold in front of you and it's just happening at the right intensity and the right pace. Why is it important, Faith? We'll talk about like how you might go about it. Why do you think it's important? I've got my views on why I like the players to be engaged, obviously, and how it might pan out. But from a player development point of view, why is it important that we try and get our players engaged in the sessions?
I think it, like I said before, it builds, they keep coming back. It allows them to keep coming back to the sport. It allows for numbers to continue growing. I think if we look at the female side specifically, females engaging in the sporting world is something that's key if we're wanting to grow the female game. If we're wanting to continue to have numbers get higher and higher, we're watching national teams go. And Canada soccer, for example, our national women's team did phenomenal in the past few years. So kind of the girls seeing that and engaging in female sport outside of their own and wanting to come back and having something to work towards and kind of that sort of thing is super, super important if we're wanting to continue to grow females in sport. Having them engaged and wanting to come to practice, like, we can't have females in sport if they don't want to come. We can't create an environment that they don't feel like they want to come. They don't wake up wanting to come. They dread coming after school, that kind of thing. So making sure that that environment is one that is welcoming and they want to come to. And obviously it's important to build numbers and we want to keep the female game growing and keep the game in general growing, right? I would argue we have one of the best games in the world. So we want to keep growing that as much as we possibly can.
Okay, how would you recommend them for... I fully agree with that 100%. I would also say that I think the thing, what I've learned over the last few years is when you're doing a practice where the players are engaged, their development comes on so much faster, right? Because they're into it, aren't they? So a 15-minute practice where the players are at 80% is okay. Mm-hmm. When they're at 100%, it just magnifies everything up so much more. So the engagement is so important for lots of different reasons. What tips would you have for coaches about how they might build engagement in their sessions?
I think, again, going back to the like player ownership, let them explain their logic and acknowledge it and entertain the idea of it. Hear them out. Let them explain why they're doing what they're doing. That relationship and building that engagement is so key to have an engaged player. If they, like I said, if they're scared to play, they're not going to want to engage in anything. Along with that, I think I said previously, but being vulnerable with them, creating the relationships, being real with them. I've come to practice and I've kind of been like, guys, like, not in a good mood. Please listen. Like, please, for me, please listen. Like, I can't be angry today. I want to have a good time. I'm happy when I'm there. You guys make me happy. Please don't wreck it today, kind of thing. So being vulnerable with them, telling them, hey, I had a really tough day at work today. I need you guys to be good today, kind of that thing. So being real with them, you're a human too. Again, they can't place you on that pedestal and have you way above them. You want to be vulnerable with them, be a human too. And then I guess the next one is creating fun experiences with them within the serious practices. So as much as we want practice to be serious and we want to be focused throughout practice, I am a strong believer that you need to also have fun within those practices. We can't be serious at all times. That's not realistic for that age group. So what I like to do is I have them break into teams. If we're doing a like 3v3 plus 3, break into teams. They have to come up with a team name and a team cheer. Whoever has the best one gets an extra point and gets to pick who they want to play first. So that kind of thing where it's like, yes, they know what they're doing. They have that game like situation. They're going to go play and they're going to give 100%. But they also have this like small 3 minutes of fun where they can get all their sillies out so that we know when they go onto the pitch, they're going to be at 100%.
Love that. Absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. It's funny how powerful those small things are, aren't they? Like, I mean, that's nothing to do with your technical practice or even your coaching theme, but just that one thing there, giving them 5 minutes or a few minutes just to have a bit of fun and bonding and get some things out, that will be the bit that drives the whole rest of the session up. And that stuff, I think, is the kind of the little nuggets that make the biggest difference. Would you have the players ever kind of be part of the session planning? Like, for example, would you ever get them to maybe, would they choose what they worked on or choose a game or practice? Is that something you have as part of your sessions?
Depending on what we're doing or how games have gone that week, lots of times I give them options. So I'll give them two games and I'll let them pick. If I am feeling really, really, really confident, I have let them pick a session, like create their own session. Usually it's near the end of the season where it's kind of like, okay, we focused on all our themes. I know you guys know what we're talking about now. I've seen it like pan out in a game for the last two sessions. You guys can pick what you want to do. And so and it's super interesting because sometimes they pick some of the most technical sessions that we've done.
Surprise
and they
you,
pick
right?
the games. They pick the games that emphasize these moments and that I think are like at the bottom of their fun tier. But they choose these games, and I sit there and I'm in awe of them because I'm like, I know you know what these games are doing, and I know that they're hard work. And so it's so interesting to see what they pick because, like I said, these kids continue to amaze me because they pick these intellectual games that we've played, not just because they're fun, but they tell me that they want to improve on this. And I sit back and I am just like,
It's
what?
going to challenge them, right? They pick the ones that are more
Yeah.
challenging for them. That shows a good group of players that
Exactly.
understand the journey and what's required, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, I like the idea of them kind of running, like choosing their own session and having us run it. I think there's a time and place, obviously, for that. They're not going to be choosing their session every as much as fun as that would be. That would also put me out of a job. And so yes, I like doing that. I think that yeah, there's a time and place for it, and usually it's at the end of the season when there's a lot less riding on these sessions that we're doing. But it also gives them the opportunity to kind of show what they like to do. And I do player meetings with my assistant coaches and then our athletes. And I, at the end of every player meeting this year, ask them what their favorite drill was or their favorite game was that we've played. And it was fun to see because I would argue over 60% of them said just like a full field 11v11 game,
Play.
which we don't even have 11, like we don't have enough players to field an 11v11 game. But any small side, like just small sided soccer game. And it's so fun to see that they just love playing the game. They don't need anything specific. They don't need anything fancy. They like playing the game, which is fun.
Hey, Faye, thank you so much. That's been superb. Look, you've covered some massive topics there around quality coaching, about building engagement and how you break down your sessions. Last couple of questions, if that's okay, because I know we've done our
Yeah,
time.
you bet.
Really, we ask all our guests this question. If there was one thing that you could change about the world of coaching, what might that be?
I guess if we look at the grassroots side, I would argue everyone should coach grassroots sport at least once in their life.
Love
I
it.
think that it's got a stigma for being babysitting and easy and that kind of thing. And I would love to see everyone do it at least once. I think that that's something that everyone needs to live through at least once.
Should be a law, right? I fully agree with
Yes,
that.
yes. And then my second one, I think, would obviously just be like, all coaches should be able to engage with their players in a role outside of a pedestal coaching role. So, ensuring that these players feel comfortable enough to have a conversation with you about what they feel like they need to do and what they need to reenact without being afraid of getting yelled at or getting told that they're doing something wrong or being benched or whatever it may be, redshirting, whatever it is, making sure that they're comfortable enough to have that conversation and build that relationship with you and kind of go from there and bring that into team building as well. So making sure every coach is kind of open to the idea of having re like a good relationship with all their players rather than just a coaching pedestal.
Love that, Faith. Hey, two fantastic answers. Couldn't agree more with both of them. Absolutely brilliant. And you, what's your journey now? Obviously, you've done so much already at top 22. What does the next year or two or so hold for you?
I applied for my national youth license, so I'm waiting to hear back. I should hear about that in mid-February. So fingers crossed for that I get chosen for that. And then it'll be a Canada Soccer national youth license. And I start my season with my two girls teams in the next few weeks. So looking forward to those kind of where my U15s are going for their MSA Cup, which is our national year. And so hopefully they'll do well in that. And then my U14s obviously are building up. So it's our kind of building year for our MSA prep year.
Superb. Well, you're obviously always going to be busy. I think that's what you like and how you do things. So it'd be lovely to hear maybe in a little while's time how things are going. If you ever want to come back on again and share, update us how things are working out, that'd be brilliant. If people want to find out more about you, the work you're doing, or contact you, is that possible?
Yeah, I use Twitter kind of mainly for coaching. So my Twitter is Faith Jasper 4. And then, yeah, that's kind of my main source for coaching stuff.
Brilliant. We'll put your Twitter handle in our show notes along with this.
Sounds
Faith, you've been
great.
a superstar. Thank you so much. Very much appreciate the fact you've got up really early on a Sunday morning as well to talk to us. So thank you for that.
The
I
sun
will
is
stop
out
moaning about.
now. It's not dark in here.
Yeah, but it's probably still minus 15 outside or something, right?
It's probably still that cold.
Lovely talking to you, Faith. Thanks so much. And look, please do come back on and update us how things are going.
You bet I will for sure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.